Hello and welcome to Additive Insight, your source for news, interviews and comment on the latest 3D printing and additive manufacturing intelligence brought to you by the TCT content team. I'm Laura Griffiths, TCT Head of Content, and on today's episode we have a conversation with Filomeno Martina, CEO and co-founder of WAM3D. Founded by a research team at Cranfield University following a decade of pioneering research into wire arc additive manufacturing, WAM3D is a UK-based developer of large-scale metal 3D printing systems aimed at large industrial applications in industries such as aerospace, energy, marine, and mining. On today's episode, Martina discusses creating value in supply chains with WAM, unique opportunities for industrial applications, and why AM is just another tool in the arsenal of the modern engineer. Martina also provides a sneak preview of what visitors to TCT 360 can expect to see on June 56 at the NEC Birmingham. As a side note, this episode was recorded via Teams, so the sound quality isn't our usual, but we hope you'll enjoy the episode. And if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And for more additive insight, head over to tctmagazine.com to get your free print subscription to the mag and the biggest news stories of the week delivered straight to your inbox.
Good morning, Fila. Welcome to the Additive Insight podcast. How are you doing today?
All right. Yeah, good morning back to you. Thanks for having me.
We always end up catching up at TCT 360, usually in the summer, but I'm getting you at a very busy time right now, I understand. I do always start by asking our podcast guests the same question. I'm always interested to know, can you remember the first time you saw 3D printing or remember the first time it really clicked with you as something you wanted to get involved with?
Yes. So I was a double degree student at Cranfield, and I wasn't particularly excited by any of the group projects that had been offered to us. In fact, it was our individual master thesis project, and I ended up walking past of a lecturer, and he had this metal artifact on his desk. It was a twisted column made by WAM, as I then found out. So I asked him about the technology and the part, and I was captivated straight away. And so even though I was in Cranfield to do a master's in production engineering and manufacturing management, really, I ended up doing my thesis on the very first trials of titanium deposition using plasma, which is one of our signature features. And that was 14 years ago, and I've never looked back since, really.
I think that's a really nice advertisement for additive manufacturing there, and kind of the magic of it really in those kind of scenarios, especially when you are like working in sort of the wider manufacturing sphere and seeing like how it fits in and just how different it felt like going back nearly 15 years ago. For our listeners and readers who may be familiar with who WAM3D are, we of course are very familiar at TCT and at TCT 360, but just give us, who is the company, what do you guys do?
Right, so we are born in 2018 as a Cranfield University spin-off company to create a commercial supply chain for the process, which Cranfield had been investigating really since the early 1990s, but definitely with renewed vigor since Stuart Williams, who's still the head of the center and one of the founders of the company, joined Cranfield around about 2006. We were doing a lot of high-profile demonstration works with a bunch of aerospace companies. But at that point in time, there wasn't any kind of commercial provider. And so we set out to create value in our customer supply chains, leveraging the WAM process. And therefore, we design and build 3D printers, WAM-based 3D printers, large-scale, large formats, which crucially are also powered by a bunch of software tools that we have developed from scratch. And so we get involved in quite a lot of different projects. If you imagine the customer journey, starting from the business case assessment, very recently a lot of emphasis on environmental analysis, life cycle assessment, all the way to making parts for demonstration, some serial production as well. But our main product really is the machine with the software.
And I do want to talk to you more about the technology in depth in a moment, but I just want to elaborate on something that you said. That we know that WAM3D has spun out of Cranfield University, and you've talked about your studies just a moment ago. The UK is known for being very good at additive manufacturing research, having great universities and centres and institutes, but sometimes I think we get given a bit of a hard time when it comes to turning that research into an actual business, into, you know, a like an industrialized technology. But WAM3D is the ultimate kind of story of making that possible. Can you just talk to me a little bit about that and how challenging maybe it was to make that leap?
I think in general, there might be some lack of experience in terms of various academic institutions having frameworks that are conducive to that technology. If we compare the approach that the UK takes versus the US, you know, there is some differences in the way spin-outs are managed, really. But the UK is getting better on that. The big problem that we've had, and I think a lot of hardware companies will face in the UK, is the much smaller funding pot that we can access compared to other countries such as the US, but also very recently China or Korea or even Canada. And the fact that in the eyes of a VC type of operator or a private equity firm, at the end of the day, we are just one of the many opportunities that they will access. And probably there is companies that, because of the way they function, maybe more software intensive as opposed to hardware intensive, or the kind of speed at which they can get to market because of the lighter regulation, let's say they're more attractive than companies like us. And it's very important to keep that in mind, because the struggle will lengthen, I think it's fair to say, the cycle time to close a round or subsequent rounds. We've been very lucky since the very beginning, because we have a partner in Acheron Technologies Limited that's been supporting us since the very beginning throughout our journey, and with several subsequent cash injections. They are a corporate venture, so they've got much more patience than other investors type. And at the same time, they see a use for our technology in other companies that they have in their portfolio. And so the partnership has been delivered over several dimensions, not just the hard transactional aspect of the cash exchange against the equity, but also more and more activities on the ground on how we can support their companies and, crucially, also the Southeast Asia industrial ecosystem. And then on top of that, you have to have a clear understanding of what needs. The market may not be aware of their needs, or they may be aware of their needs, but the product must serve a clear purpose. And I think in 3D printing, for a long time, there was a lot of debate on where the technology could actually be used and could deliver its full potential. And I think by now, over the last 15 years, we've got a pretty good understanding.
So as you mentioned there, the types of investment, and you've been lucky from the start to have Acheron investing in WAM, and then the most recent one I think was January this year. And I was reading back on the announcement when that happened, and you know the firm's CEO had sort of described this kind of continued investment as a testament to the shared belief the founders and we have in the company. And I just wondered if you can just elaborate a little bit on what is that shared belief in wire arc additive manufacturing? Why, what is it good for? What is special about it at this time?
All right. From the point of view of the exploitation of a technology in a production environment, or let's say in the manufacturing operations, you must be able to demonstrate a way or two, or as many as possible, in fact, to create economic value for your customer. And when we look at the way this can be manifested in WAM, we've got things that can go from prototypes to serial production to supply chain time shortening. There's quite a lot of boxes that can be ticked. And this, in terms of the total addressable market, I believe, is a much bigger share compared to other processes like powder-based fusion, which are, of course, limited in terms of the size that they can really target. But with WAM, indeed, general, especially as the build rates keep growing, we are being asked to look at parts that are much bigger, much more complicated, in a growing range of materials as well. So from the investment point of view, you can argue that the venture could become a very profitable one. Where the belief actually lies in the shortest term is in the belief that in this phase of the technology exploitation, and considering the macroeconomic circumstances, you need to accept a slightly longer horizon until a company can be sustainably profitable with really positive cash flow. And having Hackers in these moments of challenging circumstances, you know, looking at what's happening in the world, means to go together along this journey with patience, with care, knowing that the product market fit has been identified, the unit economic costs are also happening, and then we require the funds to grow region globally and to support that scale, because considering the kind of expenses that we have from the R&D point of view, you wouldn't be able to survive only if you look at one specific geography. And so you have to accept that to be a relevant player, you must act on this global scale, which of course requires funding. But other than that, we know that the technology is indeed capable and has been already doing that to create economic value in our own customers. And in fact, they are more than just that. They are partners, because we look at their problems a bit holistically together, side by side.
Mm-hmm. And you think about the fact that you can build these big parts there, and that really kind of is it an in-demand thing for additive manufacturing right now? As you say, some of the processes, you can't really expand very much. You can't really scale the technology. With this, you can. I wondered if... for any listeners who maybe don't know what wire arc additive manufacturing actually is, can you give sort of a overview of how the technology works, and then also maybe some of the other value propositions there that aren't just about maybe size, maybe materials and things like that?
Sure. So broadly speaking, in metal 3D printing, you need three key ingredients: a heat source, a feedstock, and a motion system. And obviously, you can have laser or electric arcs, wires, or powders that are blown or pre-placed, and you can have CNC gantries or robots and so on. So WAM really means wire arc additive manufacturing. We have metallic wires as our feedstock of choice, and then an electric arc, which can be delivered in a variety of ways. So sometimes that's using a plasma transferred arc, sometimes it's a MIG-based process, it can also be a TIG-based process. Effectively, you require a sort of electric arc, which creates the main pool in which the wire is fed. And then you might have a robot, which takes the printing head around. The biggest challenge of WAM, really, is that, differently from powder bed, the layer height is not... And because of the size of the melt pool, if things don't go quite right, defects will appear at a rather macroscopic scale. And that is a problem because of the size of the part themselves. You can't really heat them. And so it's very important that they come out perfect. And that perfect is defined in a different way, depending on the physicality of the part, straight off the printing process. And a lot of our efforts have gone into process monitoring and process control to make these parts of growing complexity and size in a way which is really robust and reliable. So when we look at the ways WAM can help our customers, you typically have, I like to take a Kaizen approach to it, because Kaizen is all about eliminating waste. And you may have waste because you're machining 90% of your feedstock away into swarf, or because you've got very high non-recurring costs associated with forging tooling, or your supply chains are very constrained, or you have inherent defects that are built into the price. And of course, you know, you have the more straightforward things around how to produce prototypes and so on. And so typically you have aerospace or oil and gas or architecture that are looking at very different things, but often have got the same problems, the same pain problems in the supply chain. And so come to us, it's funny because we say we can make parts that are up to five meters inside, let's say. And the day after we say that, we are asked to make a quote for a part which is 10 meters. And it looks like people will always find more and more pain points everywhere in their operations. But typically, we look at excessive material waste and excessively long lead times in highly constrained supply chain. So you might have titanium part or nickel-based superalloys, aluminium, very attractive, but still quite tricky because of the challenges around achieving strength level that are compared to forging. And then what we're being asked to do more and more is also multi-material structure, where you can optimize based on the design. You can also optimize based on the allocation of alloys, of different alloys, which must be compatible, but give you the ability to have different properties around the part. And the last point I wanted to make is that You can use additive to make parts from scratch or to repair or remanufacture expensive assets that are damaged or worn. And we are asked more and more to look at these sort of cross industrial applications or exploitation avenue, let's say, to take very massive, large metallic parts that would be otherwise scrapped, sent to landfills, and give them a second life, third life, which has huge implications on the overall availability of this, let's say, industrial plants where these objects are used, but also on the environmental sustainability of the process as a whole.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about supply chains there and some of these industries that do have quite restrictive supply chains, and that they're turning to as a solution. Are you seeing customers looking at WAM as an overhaul of that, or are they just using it as kind of a temporary solution to get back onto the traditional way of doing things, or is it a bit of both?
It depends. So I think there is a lot of new programs or major overhauls of existing platforms. So in terms of new programs, you may think about new commercial airlines or new fast jets for military application, mm-hmm. or in terms of overhaul, for example, upgrading existing oil platforms or mm-hmm. Or nuclear power plants. So in these kind of major projects, you have the chance to inject the technology as a key manufacturing process. And in fact, choice for the manufacture of certain components because of the business drivers, which I've just outlined. But then you have a bunch of other cases in which you may want to have both supply chains, the traditional one and the additive one, running in parallel to make sure that if one or the other is struggling, you can ramp up the other one momentarily to make sure you can hit your delivery targets. And there is a bunch of industries, and I can't go into any more specific than that, where there is a huge pressure to deliver products with a very specific cadence. The backlogs are huge. And so the idea of de-risking your supply chain by having multiple processes doing the same thing is a very attractive proposition.
I know you just said that you obviously can't name certain projects or customers, and that's always the way. It's the least fun part of my job.
Sorry.
But I know that, towards the end of last year, WAM was announced as a partner on an ATI project to manufacture some aircraft landing gear. I wondered if you can elaborate on any kind of progress that's been made, though, or if you can touch on any of the ongoing projects where you can give us a bit more detail as to where the technology has been used.
Yeah, so this is one of the biggest frustrations that I have, because we are working on a series of super cool, high-profile projects, but we can't say much until the final deliverable will be achieved. And that's obviously because of some commercial implications, mm-hmm. but also because we don't want to be guilty of hyping up the technology and then maybe have to manage expectations a little bit too late in the process. So we've got a bunch of them, and hopefully before the end of this calendar year, we'll be able to share one or two things about some cool stuff we've been working on relating to aerospace. Regarding the ATI grant, it's obviously a very ambitious project backed by the UK government, focusing on the next generation landing gear for future programs. And obviously we are looking at it because of the business drivers and the limitations that traditional supply chains might have. There is also a strong emphasis on the environmental improvements associated with the implementation process. And at the moment, we're in the hottest part of the project, where we're doing a bunch of mechanical testing and validations, progressing along the time plan with no particular delays, which is great when there is such an element of technological uncertainty and therefore risk. And I think we've got two more years to go on the project, and I'm sure you know about major updates and results in due course.
So for now, I'll just put WAM tells us about super cool projects and that.
Super cool projects, yes. It's a pity, you know, and I think that in the next couple of years, probably we'll see us delivering a bunch of case studies that are representative of what the process can really do without any particular considerations on confidentiality, because it won't be real parts So there'll be definitely more of that coming up.
And it's just an observation of mine, but I feel like we've seen more interest in WAM style technology in the last few years, and more companies kind of come to the fore with developing this type of technology. Why do you think that is? Why do you think there is such an interest in this technology now? And also, what's keeping WAM3D unique?
It's such an interesting question, which can be addressed by or from several point of view. And I always take, or I'm trying to take, a very strong, hard-nosed microeconomics view of it. You have a basic technology, which in its core is based on fully off-the-shelf technological elements. Really, that's part of our own narrative. If you go back to the kind of academic publications that we were doing in the middle of the 2000s, you know, late 2010s and so on, we always advocated for the lower barrier to that one can have. You have a robot and a welding power source, or a CNC motion system and a welding power source, and really, you're more or less set in terms of the basic aspect of the technology. And obviously, we've been making quite a lot of promotion in terms of the business drivers and values that technology can have on the customer side. So it's absolutely normal to see a large number of players entering the market to try and seize a little bit of that economic value. And in my opinion, what's happening in our field has got the hallmark characteristics of what's known as monopolistic competition, where you have a bunch of companies that are selling a lot of different products, which ultimately are trying to do the same thing. And in fact, on the long end of the spectrum, in terms of the capability, we're all competing for the same contracts. And of course, you will have new players coming from China or from emerging markets, which will try to achieve cost benefits and effectively undermine the profitability that other companies might have. And just like they enter, you will have a bunch of other companies exiting. And this kind of equilibrium point between the number of players and the price of the machines will continue to shift around that equilibrium value. Our key differentiator is really how we've been able to take those off-the-shelf components and add a bunch of newly designed, bespoke sensors, health and safety devices, control equipment, to make the machine a lot more capable, as underpinned by software, which we've been developing over the last 15 years now. And in fact, the TAM, you know, the trajectory generator, was the first real product that we had, because back in the days, you have the robot and you have the power source, but we had no means to actually program it. So we started from there, then we created a bunch of algorithms to calculate processes automatically. And if you go back to what I said, the layer height not being fixed, actually getting the geometry right is when we take a lot of responsibility as a supplier of machine and technologies by having algorithms that do the calculation automatically for you for a bunch of different materials, for a bunch of different geometries. And then obviously the control system, which is heavily leveraging the high capability of the sensors that we have. And so we are trying to position ourselves as a slightly premium provider, which machines that can be customized to suit all budgets, let's say, in all capabilities, but that on the higher end range of the specification, I've got some pretty unique features. The list of which that we have announced, we're talking about for the last year or so, this new high productivity one variant, which can do 15, 16 kilograms an hour, which is something that we have patented, and that's definitely unique to us.
And you've just talked then about the way the technology has developed, even in just the last few years. And after launching the RoboWAM system at 360 a few years back now, you've introduced like these capabilities, all these things that have really just helped push the technology forward. And I do hear that you are planning on launching something else at the event this summer. Can you give us any sort of hints as to what that might be? I appreciate you might not be able to tell us straight out the gate what it is, but any ideas you can give us?
So first of all, I have to say that we've got quite a broad range of products, the software and the hardware. We've got some specific raw materials, you know, our aluminium filler wires and so on. And we have 1 year long or 2 year long product cycles that therefore result in quite a lot of announcements over the calendar year. And we look at TCT 360 as one of the key events to go public with some product updates, and obviously Formnext in November. So 6 months apart, one in the UK at our doorstep and one with a bit of a more European flavor. And all I can say for what's coming at TCT 360 this year is we're gonna show and release something new on the hardware side. We'll be probably seen by our friends out there as a bit of a departure. Okay. Compared to what we've been traditionally associated with. There'll be some more teasing happening, I think, over the next couple of weeks on social media. So, yeah, do keep an eye on our LinkedIn page for some sneaky photographic preview. But other than that, if you want to see what's new, you've got to be at the show in June.
Thanks for doing my job for me there, Phil. I appreciate that. If you do have the time, I just want to ask you some more kind of general questions, really, and to wrap things up. I want to talk a little bit about the UK. You know, as you just said, this event is on your doorstep. This is a technology that's spun out of a UK-based university. I wanted to get your thoughts on what do you kind of think is good about the UK's additive manufacturing market right now? What kind of unique offering do we have? And then on the flip side of that, what kind of advantages do you think additive manufacturing can bring to the UK market? It's a bit of a double-sided question.
Well, I think the UK has got a lot of phenomenal academic institutes that are covering the whole of the value chain. Obviously, you've got Cranfield on the wire-based DD side of things. They work with Manchester, Material Science, you know, Coventry, mm-hmm. Structural Integrity, Strathclyde on inspection. You've got Birmingham on the powders. You've got, obviously, Bath and Swansea. And, of course, a lot more that I apologize if I forgot. You know, there's obviously the ones. So the academic base is doing a fantastic, fantastic job. On the industrial side, you have a bunch of companies like obviously Airbus and Boeing on the aerospace side, pulling a lot. GKN, they've been super committed to the technology mm-hmm. portfolio. You know, not just powder bed and powder metallurgy, but also their DD over in Sweden, which is obviously feeding into their program in Bristol. You've got Renishaw, Wayland as well. So bigger company, newer company, trying to provide solutions. So I think on the industrial front, you've got this very good mix of world-leading academic expertise and some pretty, pretty big names that are trying to translate that into industrial options. I think that where the UK is struggling at this moment in time is with the funding, the size of the funding that's been allocated to additive-specific projects. And that's very different from what's happening over in China with the, you know, 20, 30 billion programs, the US as well, with their America Makes Initiative and Biden, you know, being very strong supportive to technology, and Canada very recently as well. And in the UK, we find ourselves, for example, competing for grant funding, which is very broad in terms of the scope of the calls, and, you know, with incredibly, incredibly low success rates. And that combined with the not so attractive tax incentives and R&D tax break and the recent tightening of the immigration rules make doing business in the UK very, very challenging. And we start already in a place of disadvantage if we look at our competition in countries like you know, Spain or Italy or other parts of Europe. So that's very, very hard. On the other hand, we have a bunch of SMEs, a bunch of tier one and tier two supplying to the aerospace market on the engine side, on the airframe side. And these companies, you know, they are right to be a bit more patient, a bit more risk averse. But I think they will be the ones that will benefit the most out of a fuller technological exploitation, especially as far as the one process is concerned, because of the very little capital investment required to acquire technology and a rather quick way to effectively produce value with the machines. And these are the companies that we're trying to nurture, because you know, you have the usual problem with the upskilling and technological transfer, but the ecosystem is big, is vibrant, and quite ready to take it to the next step. So I think it's the funding where the UK needs to work a bit more and be more supportive of companies like us.
Okay. And in your 14 years now in additive manufacturing, what is one thing that you think would be useful for anybody new to additive to just understand now that would save them a lot of pain and a lot of time in the future?
Oh, I think it's a rather general advice, the one I may want to give, which is to really do your due diligence, make sure you come prepared from a technical point of view. I think, like all new technologies, you have a bunch of firms that really know what they're doing, and others that are sort of riding the hype and the marketing excitement. And sometimes it's tricky to distinguish between the two groups. The only way to do that is to understand the subject matter, and understanding that, you know, 3D printing, people always say this, is just another tool in the arsenal of the modern engineer. It's not a panacea for all problems in manufacturing. It needs to be used tactically and cleverly to make the most out of technological characteristics. Mm-hmm. And so understanding where these points really are in reality, I think it's key to save a lot of pain up front, to choose the right partners, and to progress quite quickly in the first part around, you know, candidate components identification and planning for the technology certification, because obviously, especially with WAM, considering the type of part we're looking at, you will have to go through a rather painful, perhaps, but useful and needed process of qualification and certification, which needs to be factored in since the very beginning.
And the last question then, we've just talked about some of the things that we've got to look forward to with WAM 3D and some of the events coming up. I wondered if you can just give us your view of how you're feeling about additive manufacturing in the next few years. Are you feeling optimistic, cautious, cautiously optimistic? What's your kind of view on the overall optimism in the industry right now?
Well, obviously last year was tricky, wasn't it? Because we had this massive crash in the stock market after this kind of wave of SPAC offering in 2020-2021. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's used as a barometer to gauge the health of the industry. I don't think that's fair, because these are market distortion, in my opinion. We also saw this massive saga, which was quite interesting in terms of M&A and hostile or less takeovers, especially in the US. I think the macro circumstances are very challenging right now. The interest rates are still high, investments are slow. There is a major shift in the geopolitical stability, which we are witnessing every day. So to me, the most important thing over the next 2 years, the most important objective will be to stay in the game and to prepare for the massive change in terms of uptake that will happen when this kind of challenges will be behind us. Obviously, that will require some cash, which will have to be provided by the capital markets. So, I mean, good luck to those that will have to face that challenge. But other than that, regardless, considering the growing emphasis on especially the resilience of the supply chain, you can't but be optimistic around the overall exploitation of the technology. And so you might see a slope, which is maybe a little smaller, but the end result, where everybody's heading, is very much positive and bright ahead of us. So it's just a time. And, you know, we've witnessed a lot of these sort of cyclical changes to the uptake of the technology, but there is a lot of very successful case studies, very successful use cases that we read every day. And so we should look really at the positive of what the technology has been able to do for all of us in the last 20 years now, actually.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Phil. I really appreciate you taking this morning to talk to me. Is there anything else that you kind of wish that I'd asked you about that you'd like to touch on before I let you go?
No, it's been a rather interesting conversation. There's going to be a lot more things that I would love to talk about, but as I said, I can't anyway. So you just have to keep up with us for a bit longer until we are able to go full out with this kind of new projects that we've been working on, some of which for 3 or 4 years, actually. As I said, this year there'll be a bunch of announcements. TCT will be the first batch. Then over the summer, some more, and finally Formex as well. We're very excited about the future, and we hope to help more and more companies creating value in their operations using WAM. So thank you very much for having me.